This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. A UN commission on Syria says a pending battle between pro-government forces and thousands of jihadists in Idlib province should not result in the taking hostage of 3 million civilians. Paulo Sergio Pinheiro, chair of the Independent Commission of Inquiry on Syria, called it tragic so many people fled to Idlib to escape fighting elsewhere.
It's pathetic that this population transferred to Idlib is supposed to be confronted with these bombardments. But I think that's very important. The communication among the principal influential countries is not interrupted. This is continuing at this very moment that we are here. And we expect that this political conversation will prevent this carnage.
Pinheiro said the battle for Idlib would trigger a catastrophic human rights and humanitarian crisis. Syrian forces backed by Russia have been massing fighters on the edge of the northwest province, which borders Turkey, to assault the last major rebel stronghold. This displaced Syrian from Khan Sheikhoun arrived in Basuta, controlled by the Free Syrian Army. He said, "When your house has been destroyed, your brother killed, you arrive in a camp in the rain, it is bad." The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said intermittent artillery fire hit southern districts of Idlib, the adjacent province of Hama, Wednesday. The Zimbabwean government Wednesday banned public gatherings in the capital Harare following a cholera outbreak that has claimed more than 20 lives. Local resident Janet Chari said the borehole she had been using is shut down, leaving her with no source of fresh water. An emergency has been declared. The health ministry said thousands have become ill with cholera and typhoid. This is VOA News. UN envoy to Libya, Ghassan Salameh, announced Wednesday a new security arrangement implemented after rockets were fired at the international airport in the capital Tripoli less than a week after fighting among rival militia was ended. Salameh said some of the new measures are already being implemented, including the withdrawal of heavy weapons and militia from the city. Meanwhile, the U.S. has targeted militia leader Ibrahim Jathran with sanctions for directing attacks on Libya's oil infrastructure. In China, 9 died, nearly 50 were injured when a car plowed into a crowded square in the central town of Mishui in Hunan Province Wednesday. Police have detained the driver. A motive has not been made public. Hurricane Florence has weakened to a Category 2 storm, but is expected to dump historic levels of rain on the U.S. southeast beginning early Friday as it makes landfall. It is still packing nearly 200 kilometer per hour winds. President Donald Trump said federal disaster assistance is ready to help those affected.
We're fully prepared, food, medical, everything you can imagine. We are ready.
The hurricane is expected to strike North Carolina first, where Roy Cooper is the governor.
Move to safety if your home is at risk. Bring in supplies if it's not. Plan to be without power for days.
The storm is forecast to bring a nearly 3-meter storm surge and could dump up to a meter of rain, causing flooding and high winds which could spawn tornadoes, resulting in widespread power outages. The European Parliament voted to sanction Hungary Wednesday for flouting EU values of democracy, human rights, and the rule of law, a move that could lead to the stripping of its voting rights. Hungary's foreign minister denounced the action as petty revenge of pro-immigration politicians. The International Agency for Research on Cancer has warned that the illness will claim nearly 10 million lives this year. Dr. Freddie Bray heads the cancer surveillance section.
And then a projection based on the rate staying the same, but population aging and growth occurring, as it will, over the next 20 years. In 2040, it will be 29.3 million cases.
Lung cancer remains the main killer. Nearly half of the new cancer cases, more than half the deaths, will occur in Asia, where smoking remains widespread. Pope Francis has summoned senior bishops to the Vatican next February to discuss the protection of minors from sexual abuse. It comes in the wake of scandals affecting the church in the U.S., Chile, and Australia. President Donald Trump Wednesday signed an executive order designed to make U.S. elections more secure, slapping sanctions on any foreigners found trying to interfere in the electoral process. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi expels UN Human Rights Commission experts.
We should not tell the government that Burundi cannot cooperate with submission imposed. Any mechanism related to human rights by force, we cannot accept.
Martin Nimiabandi is Burundi's human rights minister. Former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan is being laid to rest today in his native Ghana. Ugandan parliamentarian Bobby Wine has accused the government of paranoia. Meanwhile, the Ugandan government says it does not torture its own citizens.
On the alleged torture as a principle, Uganda is a signatory to the United Nations Convention Against Torture. In fact, it is the NRM government that ratified this charter.
Mosibuha Katende is Uganda's ambassador to the United States. And this year's second annual Dakar Music Festival is in its planning stages. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi's government has banned members of the UN Commission of Inquiry from visiting the country. The country's foreign affairs minister declared members of the commission persona non grata and accused the team of releasing a report which the government says contained false information. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
In a letter written by the Burundi's Foreign Affairs Minister Ezekiel Nibigira, the country was disappointed with what it called a false and defamatory report that the Commission of Inquiry made public last week. The UN Commission of Inquiry Chairman Dudu Diene, with other two commission members, won't be able to visit Burundi as part of their mandate to report on the allegations of human rights violation in the country since 2015. Martin Nivyabandi is the Burundi Human Rights Minister.
We should not tell the government that Burundi cannot cooperate with the commission imposed by human rights, by European Union. Burundi, we are ready to cooperate with all kinds of organizations, but we do not imposed by force. Any mechanism related to human rights by force, we cannot accept.
The UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi released a report last week indicating gross human rights violation by government officials, including the ruling party youth wing Imbonerakure. The damning report indicates serious human rights violations, with some which constitutes crimes against humanity. Agathon Rwasa, an opposition leader and deputy speaker of the Burundi parliament, warned that banning the commission to enter the country will worsen Burundi with the international community.
The facts are there. People are terrorized. People are forced to do this or to do that. People are ill-treated. That's common. What is important is even if people can just think that refuting all the reports is the good way, but what would be better? People can just sit and discuss the issues and try to improve the situation.
Burundi Human Rights Minister Martin Nivyabandi said that the Commission of Inquiry was formed without considering rules of procedures of the Human Rights Council.
Because you are a member of Human Rights Council and we know how those mechanisms operate, that's why we said that we cannot cooperate. And also, it was very obvious. This Commission of Inquiry had some recommendations from the European Union. The conclusion was before known by the government of Burundi.
This is not the first time Burundi declares a UN official persona non grata. Several officials since 2014 were declared non grata by the government after failed UN-mediated dialogue to put an end to the political crisis that rocked the country since 2015. Moses Javier Imana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Ugandan opposition member of parliament Robert Chagulayi, popularly known as Bobby Wine, has accused the Ugandan government of paranoia to the point that he says the government doesn't want Ugandan young people to communicate with one another through social media. Bobby Wine, who is in the United States for specialized medical treatment, was the guest on VOA's Straight Talk Africa television program on Wednesday, along with Uganda's ambassador to the United States. But many Ugandans did not get to see the interview because of a power outage. The Ugandan Umeme Power Company put out a statement saying the power outage was nationwide and that it was working to restore supply. But Bobby Wine said the outage was all a plan by the Ugandan government to stifle anyone trying to give hope to the people of Uganda. He stopped by our Washington studio to tell me he and the people of Uganda are unstoppable. Honorable Bobby Wine,
yes,
welcome
sir.
To Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Africa.
Thank you. So nice to see you again. The last time I spoke to you, you were not that well. How are you doing?
I'm better. I get better every day.
Every day?
Yeah.
You sound better.
I have no option but to get better. I got work to do.
You were on Straight Talk Africa Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And just when you were on that program, there were news from Uganda that there was a power outage.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Well, that's paranoia. The regime in Kampala is so paranoid that they're even scared when we communicate, especially as young people. They don't want Ugandans to communicate with each other. They don't want to see anybody giving hope to the people of Uganda. So they'll do anything.
So you think it's the Ugandan government that is behind that?
Well, I think the people who are responsible to light up the city deliberately blacked out the city.
Someone just sent me a statement from this Umeme Power Company, is that correct?
Yes.
It says here, dear esteemed customers, we have been advised by our supplier, Uganda Electricity Transmission Company Limited, of a nationwide outage. The UETCL team are working to restore supply. We regret any inconvenience caused. What do you make of this?
Well, I got news for them. We are living in a generation which is faster than they think. Before long, everybody in Uganda will watch that program because that program was streaming live. And indeed, allow me to make an advert right here. Dear Ugandans, Voice of America was streaming live on Facebook. So you can go on Facebook and watch the entire program. We are unstoppable. They cannot stop us. We are going to communicate and we're going to listen to each other.
Talking about unstoppable, do you still plan to return to Uganda?
I am going back to Uganda next week.
Even what's happening now?
Man, that's my home, yo. That's where I come from. That's where I'm born. And that's where I'm going to be buried. So make no mistake, I am going back to Uganda.
I know you are here for medical reasons. How do you think this trip is going in terms of your effort to bring to light your own plight and the situation in Uganda? How is it going?
Well, I've been very humbled with the opportunity to highlight the plight of my people. This is not just about me. You know, I was tortured, I was brutalized, but I know that Ugandans have been tortured over many years. Even with the day we were arrested, it was 33 of us that were beaten and tortured. And indeed, a few other colleagues were even more brutalized than I am. So the little I can do is to use my opportunity to raise the voice of the millions and billions of people in Uganda that are being oppressed.
The government does not believe that you were tortured or you were badly wounded, as you claim, because the government spokesman said, or the Minister of Interior was saying that if you were tortured and badly mishandled, then how did you fly 13 hours from Uganda to the United States?
I guess the government still doesn't believe that my driver was also killed. That is the government.
Bobby Wine, so nice to have you on Daybreak.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much again.
Cheers.
And good luck. That's Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Chagulai, popularly known as Bobby Wine. He was speaking with me here in our Washington studio. Uganda's ambassador to the United States, Mo Sibuha Katende, says the Ugandan government does not torture its own citizens. Ambassador Katende says Uganda is signatory to UN Convention Against Torture.
There has been a lot of information circulating on the media that there is a lot of crisis in Uganda. I want to assure all our viewers that there is no crisis in Uganda. Secondly, Uganda remains committed to the tenets of democracy, rule of law, and respect for human rights. On the issues which the Honorable here has alluded to, they are before the court, and the court will pronounce itself on them. And here we are guided by the rule of sub judice. But Let me say this. Uganda does not condone torture. And whatever issues the Honorable has and any others of his association, any issues they have will be pronounced on in court. Uganda has functioning institutions, and I'm sure the Honorable will agree with me that he's benefiting from some of them. He's now here on bail, he will continue to observe the due process. On the alleged torture, as a principle, Uganda is a signatory to the United Nations Convention Against Torture. In fact, it is the NRM government that ratified this charter in 1987. Thirdly, we have a Uganda Human Rights Commission. The chairman of the Human Rights Commission visited the Honorable, and he will produce a report. The commission is an independent institution. It is not influenced by government, and we will look forward to its report.
Unfortunately, Mr. Ambassador, time happens not to be our best ally.
Yes, yes. But otherwise, I was going to tell you that UPDF Board of Survey has instituted an inquiry. The Uganda Police Force has also instituted an inquiry. Any security forces that might have committed commissions will face the consequences.
Uganda's ambassador to the United States, Mall Sebuha Katende, he appeared Wednesday on VOA Straight Talk Africa with host Shaka Sally. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today's Thursday, September 13th. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. The leader of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change, Patrick Oboa Amuriat, has called on the international community to review its military cooperation with the National Army, known as the Uganda People's Defense Forces, the UPDF. The call followed what Amuriat said was torture and violence by state security agencies of opponents of President Yoweri Museveni. Amuriat spoke with viewers Peter Clotty.
European countries and America may really need to interrogate very, very closely what is happening in the UPDF. Some of the atrocities that have been committed, including the killing of tens of people, hundreds of people actually, in Kasese in Western Uganda sometime last year. These have got to be investigated, and if the UPDF is found to be wanting, as we believe in the FDC that they will be found to be wanting, then there must be a review in the cooperation between those countries and Uganda in terms of military cooperation.
But some supporters of the NRM are saying that if the international community pulls out support or cooperation for the UPDF, the entire Ugandan society will suffer because of forces, including the Lord Resistance Army. They will come and destabilize the country. So your call is misplaced, and it will be to the detriment of the country Uganda.
What the military and the government of Mr. Museveni should do is to prove that that is what the UPDF actually stands for. If the guns are being turned against the citizens that they are supposed to protect, then they fail in their duty to ensure that the citizens of the country are protected. So really, this is a burden that is not on the citizen of the country. The burden is on Mr. Museveni and the UPDF, that is the National Army, to prove that, you know, they are carrying their duty in consonance with the instruction of the Constitution, and that they have not caused harm or pain on the people of Uganda. There is evidence to show that the people of Uganda have suffered under the hands of the army. And so really, if they can refute that evidence that is available, then maybe that kind of cooperation can continue. But really, at the moment, this is an indictment on the security forces, and it's up on them to be able to prove their case.
Patrick Oboy Amurayat is the leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from Kampala. Ghanaians and the world are saying a final goodbye today, Thursday, to former United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan, who died August 18 in a Swiss hospital at the age of 80. Tribal chiefs, world leaders, and other mourners filed past Annan's coffin, draped in Ghana's flag at the International Conference Center in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Ghana's Information Minister Kofi Opong Nkrumah says Annan's death has been a moment of introspection for the country.
It's a very somber mood in Ghana, so it has been for the last about 4 days since his remains arrived in Ghana and we started the process of mourning and preparing to finally inter him. Ordinary Ghanaians have had an opportunity to come pay their respects. Dignitaries and traditional leaders have done so. This morning, the global community with heads of state from many parts of the world and United Nations officials also join us to pay their last respects before his final interment. It's been a moment of introspection also for us as a country.
You talk about the global community. I'm sure there's many dignitaries from around the world. Who are some of the people, you know, dignitaries that are there for this funeral?
The United Nations Secretary General himself is here. Mr. Guterres, the Emir of Qatar is here. So are other, I say, royalty from other parts of the world who have all come to the president of Cote d'Ivoire, Namibia, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Ethiopia, Niger, former head of state of Germany, and several other parts.
What can you tell us about the official program itself for today? What does it look like?
Mr. Annan is a Christian of Anglican heritage, and so we'll have an Anglican funeral service laced with contemporary art performance, both from Ghana and other parts of the world. I will have an opportunity to hear from his wife and children also as they share their tributes. The president of Ghana and the United Nations as well will also be paying their tribute.
Many have spoken about the former UN Secretary General since his passing. Now, as a Ghanaian, how do you think he should be remembered?
I think he should be remembered as a man who depicted the excellence of the Ghanaian on the global stage. The man who depicted the warmth and humility of the African on the world stage. And a man who also depicted depth and a desire to unite all persons in pursuit of the common human goal. These are values that we have been talking about in Ghana in the days gone past, and we are hopeful that as we remind ourselves of his life and his values, a lot more young people will emulate his example.
Mr. Nkrumah, thank you very much again. So nice to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Kofi Opong Nkrumah is Ghana's Information Minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Accra. This year's second annual Dakar Music Festival is in its planning stages as organizers hope to double the attendance from last year's audience of around 4,000. One of the organizers, Sophie Araya, tells Ricky Schreier the theme for the November event is when electronic music meets African music.
What will be different is that, of course, we're going to organize better because we learned from the first year what was good and what was not good in the organization in terms of promotion, in terms of communication, in terms of artists also. And what we want to do this year is to be more connect with Dakar people, because last year we was doing too much communication like internationally, to bring people from outside the country, but also we want like people from Dakar come to the festival. It's our first thing we want.
And how many people came last year? And how many are you hoping to attend this year?
Last year we did like around 4,000 people in all the events we did, because we organized 17 events during the 10 days. So we was pretty happy, and I hope we're going to do the double this year.
As far as the lineup goes, what kind of musicians are you bringing in this year?
The theme of the festival is when electronic music meets African music, like African vibe. So it will be a mix of electronic music. We have DJ coming from France, from Russia, from Italy, Spain. Last year we had also one American artist, and also we have like artists from Senegal, like Didier Awadji, Souleymane Fay, and some newcomers also.
Besides music, will there be any other artistic events that are not necessarily music events, but let's say, you know, visual art?
Yeah. Of course, we do like art exhibition also. Last year, we had the chance to have one art installation in the June near the Pink Lake. So it was made by a girl called Bonham Lass. It was a three meters art installation with metal and with a man in the middle that can move when people play with it.
Why did you think this was an event you wanted to do that might add to the discourse?
The thing is, like, all the landscape are amazing. So we wanted to show to the people. Like, for example, there's a lot of people from Dakar. They didn't know the dune near the Pink Lake. So it's a good way to show the country to the local people also. And, of course, to the international people that come, because I think more people should come to Dakar because it's really amazing.
That was Sopian Ara, one of the organizers of the Dakar Music Festival. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Spain. New data show a significant increase in the incidence of global cancer. The International Agency for Research on Cancer, part of the World Health Organization, estimates a rise in new cases of cancer to more than 18 million, including 9.6 million deaths this year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva at the launch of the latest report on 36 types of cancer in 185 countries.
The report finds one in five men and one in six women worldwide develop cancer during their lifetime, and more men than women die of the disease. It says nearly half of the new cases and more than half of cancer deaths this year occurred in Asia, in part because nearly 60% of the global population lives there. The data show lung and breast cancers, followed by colorectal, prostate, and stomach cancers, are responsible for the highest numbers of new cases globally. It cites lung cancer as the leading cause of death, accounting for 1.8 million deaths in 2018. International Agency for Research on Cancer Head of Surveillance, Freddie Bray, says by 2040, the number of new cancer cases is projected to rise to 29.3 million and the number of deaths to 16.3 million.
The biggest increases in the cancer burden, a doubling of the cancer burden to 2040, is going to occur in countries at the lowest levels of socioeconomic development. So many in sub-Saharan Africa, some in South America, some in Southern Asia. But they're the countries faced with this increasing cancer burden that are presently ill-equipped to deal with this pending increase.
Etienne Krug is director of the World Health Organization's Department of Non-Communicable Diseases. He says many of the main cancer risks killing people can be prevented by cutting down on tobacco and alcohol consumption, exercising more, and eating better. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa news. Burundi's government has banned members of the UN Commission of Inquiry from visiting the country. The country's foreign affairs minister declared members of the commission persona non grata and accused them of releasing a report which the government said contained false information. That's it for this Thursday, September 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti saying have a good day.
Relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.